The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
It is time on the mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by Mr. AWL himself, Andrew Wrestling League, Andy Hamilton.
Hello, Kyle.
AWL1 in the books, baby.
What'd you think of AWL1?
I came in with realistic expectations.
And which were?
It was probably about 500 people, just knowing that there were wrestling tournaments happening throughout the state. You had Iowa State the next day. I knew who was not going to be there. You had college wrestling tournament. So I had texted you that John Ostendorp, who is just down the road at Coe College, was not going to be there with his team. It would have made sense that he would have been there, but he had a tournament that weekend. So I think there were a lot of things you were battling, and I think overall the product came away fantastic. I had someone who is not necessarily an in-depth amateur wrestling fan. He's a professional wrestling promoter. He watched it because he was fascinated, and he said the production value was fantastic. He thought it was good, and he's a critical guy too, so I take that with a lot of weight. I thought the wrestling was good, even though there wasn't maybe an end game on this is leading to something. It was the first try, so really it was an exhibition. And I thought the exhibition was executed very well. The matches were good. There were comebacks. There was action. So I give it probably a B minus or a B for the first time around, which is really high for a first crack at something that we've tried before and failed.
Is that grading on a curve or is that just a straight up grade?
I'd say it's a straight up grade.
Okay.
Yeah, just straight up. I haven't decided B minus or B. I know you can't disclose numbers on Track Wrestling's pay-per-view, but it sounds like it was pretty good. So if Track feels good about it and feels like they had good numbers and that you guys like the production, then I'd probably bump it up to a B.
Action was great, wasn't it?
It was good. I mean, especially that last match between Zane Rutherford and Jordan Oliver. The Sammy Brooks was ridiculously good.
97 kilos, Kyvan and Jacob Casper. Gosh. That was such a fun match. The second period of that match, there was so much stuff happening.
They were doing a little merry-go-round there, and I was like, who's going to get this? And hats off to Jacob Casper because he went after it.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked that because he went for a shot right at the end there and was trying to win the match instead of just playing patty cakes there and just staying away and thinking he can't win it. I just thought, across the board, except for super heavyweight, Zach Ray, I think, was that his last match?
Yeah.
I think it was his last match. So, great career for him. But I tell you, Mike Machiavello won a lot of fans over. I think he has a great upside. Bill Zadik was talking about just being glad that he has him in the fold for the next couple of years. So, really give it high marks. I thought it was just a really good product.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed with the action, and this guy's got after it. Boy, conditioning was a factor, a big-time factor.
You saw that.
Look at 74 kilos, Tommy Gant coming back. Made a lot of fans in Iowa. Tommy Gant did with the way he came back and won that match against Richie Lewis. And then certainly Sam Brooks had already had a ton of fans in Iowa, but that was an impressive comeback from down 4-0, making it coming back from down 4-0, winning 11-4. I added it up the other day, and I'm going to pull it up. But David Taylor knew what he was doing when he put this team together. He went with guys who were world team training partners, so he knew those guys were in shape. He went with guys that he knew were in shape because he knows them really well. Penn State guys, Nico Megalutis, Zane Rutherford. And then he banked on Iowa guys because, you know, Iowa guys probably aren't getting too far out of shape at any point in time. And let me pull this statistic up.
This is something you created on your own? I just
added it up. David Taylor's team had a 63 to 39 edge in match points. They won 7 of 10 matches. And Taylor's team outscored Dake's team 51 to 13 in the second period.
Man.
That's where it was won.
Great stat there. 51-13 in the second period.
Yes.
Okay. So if you had to give your top three matches just from entertainment point of view, because that's what this was, it was entertainment. Do you have what your top three would be? You don't even have to rank them in order, but what matches stood out to you?
65, Rutherford and Oliver. I think 97 was really fun to watch. And then you go with one of the two matches that the Iowa guys won. You know, Sam Brooks or Corey Clark, and maybe a tie, 86 kilos and 61, just because of the fan engagement brought a little more juice to those matches. They were really fun to watch. Clark getting in those flurries with Ramos in the second period. And then certainly we've talked about Sam Brooks coming back from down 4-0 and putting 11 straight on the board to beat Nick Heflin. The crowd was really into those matches.
You have this unique experience of being around a lot of these Hawkeye guys in your previous job. Where does Tony Ramos stand right now with Iowa fans? Do you think they like him? They tolerate him? Is he disliked? Where is he in all this?
Well, I think we saw mixed bag Friday night. Don't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, when he came out, there was some applause and there were some boos.
Yeah, I think it was a mixed bag.
I think that you ask probably 10 people, you're going to get a little bit of we're still Ramos fans, love him. Probably going to get a little bit in the middle, and then you're probably going to get some people that are against him now. And I wrote about the day after the blow up at the Olympic trials that it was a shame that it occurred. I don't think he handled that the right way. And I don't know. I've never really asked Tony about it, if he regrets anything that he said or did after the Olympic trials. But I do know this. I know that it stained the legacy in the minds of a lot of Hawkeye fans of a guy that was a favorite Hawkeye throughout his career.
Even if you dislike Tony Ramos, you have to like him. I know it sounds probably like a Tom Brands-ism right now, but you have to like Tony Ramos, even if you dislike him, because of what he brings. And he adds that element of interest to the sport. And I didn't like the stare downs necessarily, but I did in reality, because it heightened what the match was going
to
be.
I'll never, to interrupt you, Kyle, I'll never forget 2011 on the backside when he wrestled David Thorne at NCAAs, and there was something that went on at the head table. I don't know what the confusion was, but Ramos and Thorne were out there, and this stare down lasted, I don't know, 5 minutes maybe, while they were getting things sorted out at the beginning of the match, getting ready to start on a consolation match. Wish we could find video of that out there somewhere, because it was awesome.
Can we find that? It was hilarious. You need to get that somewhere on track so that people can see that, because that is a great memory to be able to have. But it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out with Tony Ramos, to see if he likely will go back down where he fits in on things. I think going up that weight class is a little bit heavy for him. He just hasn't been successful at that 61 kilos. I think he just needs to stay down, and I think that's where he's going to have his most success. But I think for both of us, we just want to see all these guys continue to compete. And our guest today, Nathan Tomasello, is going to be in that mix at 57 kilograms. And I like that Nathan Tomasello is going to be on our show, partly because we've asked for input from people. And this was a suggestion from Kelly DeShutter, who came to the museum with her fiance, Barry. I'm going to say 6 months ago, they came, they did a nationwide trip. They went to Stillwater. They went to Nebraska to check out the programs. And when her fiance said, or I asked, I said, where are you on the wrestling fandom scale? And where is she? He said, I'm an 89. She's 100. And so she listens to all our podcasts. She listens to all the shows on Matt Talk Online. So for her to suggest her favorite wrestler, who is Nathan Tomasello, thank you, Kelly, for making this suggestion. Thank you for listening. And we need more female passionate involvement like you have. So I'm glad you made the suggestion. So if you do have a suggestion, we will do our best to get that person on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, we will.
Yeah, I love.
Yeah, suggestions for guests, questions.
Yeah, we like that.
Quiz Kyle. Yeah, we got to start that up.
We can, because the Ask Andy question, I'm still thinking about the question of the one time season, you know, just had a one-time season where it was a success. And it still comes back to Stuart Carter for me, but there's got to be other people out there. And there's a question that I got the other day that I would love to get your input on. Greatest wrestler, and I don't know if you can say greatest, you'd have to say best wrestler never to be an All-American. Any thoughts on that?
No.
It's a tough one.
I hate answering these questions like right on the spot without doing any research.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm going to forget somebody that's totally obvious to me. It should be obvious to me.
Yeah. And the one that comes to mind for me is Nick Pasolano. When you say that, that's the number one guy for me. He and Cole Sanderson. I think both those guys weren't All-Americans for Iowa State. And I just thought they could have been. They beat great guys. And they were never All-Americans. So those are two guys that come to me. But that doesn't mean there's not a pool of guys out there as well that that just deserve to be in there.
Yeah, we're going to think up. Let's start digging into this.
Yeah, we'll come up with some for our next episode. But while we have that, we'll just make sure we plug that Nathan Tomasello will be on this show. Remarkable career. He's going to keep going with it. And so as we're talking about the 57-kilogram weight class, boy, there's going to be a lot of good stuff as we look at 2020 and the guys that are going to be in that weight class.
There's going to be a lot of good stuff in every weight class.
Well, yeah. But we're starting at the lowest weight class because we've been talking about Tony Ramos. But, man, it's going to be a complete logjam. And a lot of decisions are going to have to be made. A lot of guys, they're going to have to cut down. Take a guy like Joe Colon. He's got to cut down. There's just no way he can go up a weight class, I think, and be successful there. So it's going to be a tough weight cut. And we saw what happened to James Green when he had to cut down a couple years ago. Didn't go well. Takes a lot out of you.
So you think Colon's going down?
I think he is.
And Nashon as well.
Yep.
65. Or you look at, let's go up to 70. James Green, we already know he's going up.
Mm-hmm.
79, Kyle Dake.
Absolutely goes down.
Okay.
I'd bet a ton of money on that.
Alex Deringer?
I think he goes down.
I think he goes up.
You do?
I do.
You think he's going up a weight class, mm-hmm. huh? What leads you to that decision or thought?
He's just getting big. He's okay. getting big. And he said something the other night in his post-match interview with David Mirkatani that kind of led me to believe he's thinking 86. But
okay, well, he's a big
Valencia
dude.
Is going up.
Yeah, he will go up.
92, Jaden Cox.
Whoo, I think he goes up.
Do you?
I do think he goes up. I've thought that just knowing that he does not like that weight cut down to 86 kilograms. That is a bear for him. And so I think he's going to go up and I think he's going to test it out and see what he can do. I think he'd rather gain the weight than lose it because he's a thick guy. He's dense in those legs. I think he moves up to challenge Snyder.
What about our guest last week, Mike Machiavello?
I think he goes down.
Okay.
I think he goes down. So
anybody we're forgetting about?
Probably. There are probably a few guys that we're leaving off the list, but I think the 70 kilo, you'd have to think through there, like Chamberlain, what does he do? Probably goes down, I would say, if he can do it. I don't know what that would be. I don't know how long Molinaro is going to keep with it, but I would say he's going to go down, I would think. I don't think he can go up to 74 kilos. So just, man, it's strange to talk about because you just can't imagine some of these guys going up, but then the thought of them going down too, you just don't know they're going to have any energy to be able to perform. So maybe it weeds guys out. Maybe they can't make the cut and maybe they have to move up and just test the waters, but it will be like no other.
2-day weigh-in, day of weigh-in really changes things too.
Sure does.
How about Mark Hall?
Whoo, you're throwing some good ones here. Mark Hall goes to 74 kilos. I think he goes down. I just don't think he can go up that much. I don't think he likes to cut weight either, but I think he'll go down for that Olympic year. And then
he looks a lot bigger now than what he did summer 2017 when he was at 74 kilos.
Yeah. Well, but you're right though. The fans are going to win on this one because it's going to be playing out in an interesting way. We got to start with on the college side. It starts and stops right now at Penn State. This is a unbelievable team. This team, although Lehigh was missing, what, six starters? I think I read.
Lehigh's been in flux all year.
Yeah. And they probably will be. But the game has changed, hasn't it? The days of saying that we're going to wrestle our best guys, I think coaches are saying we're looking at March only. We're going to keep these guys healthy or try to get them healthy as much as possible. And we're willing to throw away a few duels if it doesn't matter. I think that game is now being played by coaches more and more all the time.
Well, yeah. And look at, you know, you drop a duel meet, what does it mean? I mean, there are
nothing.
There are a lot of people in our sport that whether you're playing Monopoly or whether you're competing in dual meets or chess or checkers, whatever, are out to win. And I think most people, most everybody in our sport is wired that way. But there are some that will look at it like, you know what, if we have to drop a dual meet here to do what's best for the individual long term, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are that way right now.
Yeah. And the game has changed too, that it used to be the protocol was compete internationally after college, put all your effort into that. Now there's just, it's a mixed season for some of these guys, not across the board, but you're seeing it more and more all the time. And guys trying out for various world teams. There's a variety that you can compete in now. And I think that they want their hand at freestyle glory right now. And coaches are willing to hop on board, especially at the higher end programs.
Ohio State in particular.
Yeah.
They come to mind.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle wrestling, going out and testing himself overseas the past couple, 3 years, wrestling at the Oregon in season, wrestling at Clubs Cup, things of that nature. And once Ohio State opened the door for Kyle to do that, and they've got a lot of guys with similar type goals that Tom Ryan thinks a fair thing to do is to let them all.
Yeah.
You know, so what we've seen is Miles Martin wrestled the U23 World Championships. Colin Moore wrestled at the U23 World Championships, a silver medalist there. A year ago, Nathan Tomasello wrestled at the U23 trials, and that's where he got hurt, tore his ACL.
Yeah.
But, you know, McKenna wrestled the U23 World Championships a year ago, bronze medalist. So they're committed to doing it, and I think that they see some value in sending the guys over there and in doing that type of stuff. And I think that maybe there's some residual value in recruiting too, because the elite kids now who want to win world and Olympic championships, they want to win medals at on the international stage, and they love freestyle, and so you're feeding their passion a little bit. And so I think it's been good for Ohio State for the most part. I think it certainly helped Kyle in his development, and you know, the one downside is that Tomasello got hurt.
Yeah, he did. And there are downsides to it, but
You can get hurt in practice still.
Yeah, it's a brutal sport. Anything can happen, and we see it across the board. But I think you're right, though. It is a nice recruiting pitch to say we're going to let you be who you want to be. We're not going to force you into a box. If you want to try the international style, then we're the program for you. And I think other programs are open to that. Oklahoma State, certainly with Dayton Fix. And we got to spend some time on Gable Steveson. This dude is a stud. This guy is...
I could have told you that 3 years ago,
well, Kyle. I know. We've talked about this numerous times, but now we have a nice pool of data of what we've seen in a true freshman season for a heavyweight. And this guy's unreal, man. He is he's cutting edge. And
are you surprised?
Not at all.
No, neither am I.
And we talked about that on the last show, is that... We knew coming in that he was probably the best heavyweight in the country. And he, regardless of ranking, I think he's the number one heavyweight in the country right now. No question about it.
Anthony Casares looked really good.
He has. I'm still going with Gable. I think he's okay. The
Mardessi's coming back.
He is.
Highest placing All-American.
Yeah. And Sam Stoll still in the mix as the top heavyweight. I think what he can do and what we've seen him do against high level competition, I think Gable Steveson's the guy right now.
He can go get points on his feet, no doubt. He looks like he's improved on the mat too.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, I watched him go toe to toe with Nick Wisdowski and Kyle Snyder July of 2017 at World Team Training Camp. And they were competitive matches in the practice room where Gable was scoring points on those guys. And was, you know, he was holding his own. And to me, that's when I thought, you know what, this guy's going to be a serious factor right away out of the gate to win a national title.
So from your vantage point, what's the difference between what Gable Steveson will do this season and Adam Kuhn when he was a true freshman? Because he set the world on fire too, and the writing was on the wall that he was going to be good. His true freshman season at Michigan didn't place. Why is Gable Steveson going to be different?
He's got a different skill set. He can go get a lot of points on his feet when he needs to. And he's mature beyond his years. Good balance, incredible technique. He's so good at finishing single legs when he gets a leg up in the air, and he can go get to a leg.
What is he?
Kuhn was more of the old school heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, a pummeler, a brawler. As big as he is now, he wasn't near as big then. He's a monster of a human being now.
Yes. And he's huge.
He is. Yeah, absolutely enormous.
And he's a massive dude.
You ever see that video that was floating out there on social media? One of his teammates got Kuhn in his smart car. There was like kind of like a bet whether Adam Kuhn would fit in his smart car, and he did. It's hilarious. You got to go find it. We'll dig it up.
I would love to see that. And we'll end with this. We have to talk about Iowa against Iowa State. What an incredible duel. Didn't necessarily see it coming, but once you look back, I think you can see it coming because there were some swing matches. Iowa had to pull out all the stops to get a 17-16 win over Iowa State. And I think I read that it was the only time that this dual meet has been decided by 1 point. There's been some ties. There's been some other interesting dual meets, but I think this is the first 1 point dual meet.
It was 1918, wasn't it?
Was it 1918?
I think so.
Okay. 1918. Yeah, it had to have been. Yeah, because there was a fall in there from
Marinelli. Medical forfeit.
Or 1918. Yeah,
or default.
And then a major by Spencer Lee. So, yeah, you're right. It had to be 1918. But what an incredible dual meet. And you just, the whole time, it was like every second had value. And you're just on the edge of your seat. And you can hardly breathe. And those are the meets that you want to be a part of because you just don't know what's going to happen. And Iowa State won all the swing matches except one. They get an injury default, and it still wasn't good enough. But I think that I didn't see a 1918 outcome like this. I thought it was going to be a little bit bigger gap for Iowa.
Law of percentages would say so, right? That they're not going to win in the last seconds at 41 and 49 and not going to get an injury default at 74. And they won in the final seconds at 84 and won the swing match at 33.
In Carver.
Yeah. They came from behind and won it. And one of the things that Iowa State has struggled with is staying in the fight against the Hawkeyes. And what is it now? Iowa has won, 16 in a row?
I don't know the number. It's been 05, I want to say.
I think so. It's like 46 out of the last 48 or something like that. But they, you know, a lot of those have just been that they've gotten out tough. They've gotten out fought. They hung in the battle. And what, you know, the fun dual meets to me are the ones that there's a huge range of outcomes that could have happened. When you look back at the scoreboard, Iowa could have won that duel by 25 points.
Yeah, they could have.
Iowa State could have won it by six or five, I guess. But maybe six, I guess, if Spencer loses the major there at 125.
And
if Warner doesn't come back on a bum leg and find a way to beat Willie Miklas, Iowa State wins the dual meet. Stoll wasn't going to wrestle. And inserts himself into the lineup and wins a match that Iowa had to have.
Yeah, and you look at it, Costello had never beaten him.
They're wrestling the state finals, I think.
Yeah, it never won a match against him. So just so many variables that it's fun to break this one down because it was fascinating beyond anything that I thought was possible. And I think you're going to see what this dual meet really meant with the next 3 years of data. I think we're going to see if this was legit or what it's going to look like next year at Hilton. I think we need to, the next year's dual meet really has gotten heightened by this. And I hope it's not on a Saturday of high school wrestling. I hope they put it on Sunday or someday that a lot of people can get out and enjoy, because I think people are going to get out and really embrace that duel.
Night dual meet, right?
Yeah, let's get a night
Friday dual night, Saturday night, Sunday night, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it takes to get people there. I think we want that to happen. You've been to a lot of those. I know you followed it pretty close. Have you seen anything like this?
I don't know. mean, the one where they crammed a ton of people, what, 16,000 people into Carver? That was a pretty good dual meet.
Yeah.
There were some good matches in there. Morningstar and Reader, Surtsis and Gallic.
How about the 18-16 one where I think it was Andrew Long was a freshman and so was McDonough?
Yeah, they had a scrap. They had a scrap. Is that that was the one where Metcalf pinned Mitch Mueller, I think? Yeah,
it was. Race stage.
Yeah, that was a good dual meet too. There have been some really goofy things that have happened in Iowa State duels.
Yeah.
But tremendous dual meet. I want to go back and watch it all over again. I didn't get a chance to watch it, but saw bits and pieces of it to this point and listened to Ironside and Stephen Grace on the radio for quite a bit of it. And man, it sounded like it was bonkers.
Isn't it interesting? Wrestling is one of the few sports that a loss actually can improve your ranking and your perception of a team. I think we, even in a loss, I think we're viewing Iowa State as a better team than we ever have or could have imagined. I didn't think they'd be this far along. And that's why I think the next 3 years of data is going to be important to see really where they are in the scope of things.
Yeah, let's see. Like the challenge too with teams coming along is consistency. Can you pop up there and do it once? Can you do it from start to finish throughout the year? How will they stack up against a similar team when they run into Oklahoma State?
Yeah,
a team that's pretty strong 1 through 10, good dual team with bonus potential in there. It's going to be key for them. They're going to face some other battles throughout the way. I'm really intrigued to see where this thing goes for Iowa State. And then the other point I would make is this kind of illustrates to me why we need to come up with some type of dual championship in here somehow, some way, because that was case in point why dual meets are awesome.
Yeah.
That they can, the momentum can swing so fast. Kyle, we never added it up. What would point differential index have been on that?
I didn't add it up, but I heard that Iowa outscored Iowa State in points. I don't know what it was, but I had heard that. And so immediately when I did hear that, I thought of our conversation thinking that Iowa would have won that. So, of course, you'd have to give 22 points for the medical forfeit and then the fall. So that would have to factor in there too. So I don't know if when I got that, if that factored in, but I don't think that would tip the scales in Iowa State's favor. But as we're talking about Iowa State, and I think you're going to add these up, who is Iowa State's All-American? As we talk about balance, who would be the guy that would be in the lead to be your All-American? They had one qualifier last year. And so who do you put in that mix as saying there's your rock solid All-American? I don't know Willie that there
Miklas.
Is one.
Willie Miklas, he's done it a couple times already. He would be
number one.
Yeah. He would be to me, 3-time All-American already.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think in 97 cleared out a little bit. I would say Willie Miklas would be the number one guy. I think Jarrett Deegan as well. Round of 12 guy last year, 49, not one of the premier weight classes in college wrestling right now. Like Austin Gomez.
Yeah.
Like the way that guy competes, but 33 is super deep.
It's logjam there. So we have the breakdown here. We have the scores, thanks to Andy Hamilton's mathematical mind, 76-67 in favor of Iowa. If we count falls as 22 points and injury defaults, which happened at 174, so Iowa would have come out on top in our point differential index, and that's about what you would expect if you're winning 19-18. Makes sense?
Sure.
Yeah. So,
I think so.
Yeah, I think that would be far more indicative. So I don't want us to lose momentum on PDI. I still think it's a great concept, even if it's not used for cumulative scoring. I think it's a useful tool to track how good a season is and how the season is progressing. But I think we can need to continue to do this, is look at important dual meets and figure out what the score would be based on PDI. So I'm glad we did this and breaking it down. We'll continue to do that with various duels throughout the season. The one area I'll be interested to see is if a team loses in the dual meet on the traditional scoring but wins in our scoring. It'll be fun to see if that balances out and we're able to get a score that ends up that way. I think we will a couple times. I think there'll be some that there'll be a couple falls in there maybe, and you're going to get 44 points, and it's going to make the difference. I would like to see one where there's one fall and the rest are decisions, and then you win the entire dual meet based on one fall.
That's mayhem.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that happening. So we will see if that materializes, and we'll leave it with this. You're right. Hey, we're in an interesting time. So we talk about how the game has changed in wrestling. There is absolutely no end game on dual meets anymore. National duels is gone. So it is a traditional dual meet season. You're going to have a smattering of tournaments throughout the year, but it really is your conference tournament qualifier and then the NCAA championships. That's what matters right now, and coaches are adjusting to make sure that their athletes are prepared for the end. I say we get to our guest.
I'm with you.
All right, let's do it. Andrew, our guest today, has some unique statistics. We like stats, and the one that stands out to me the most is that he is 7-0 on the biggest day of the wrestling season, that Saturday of the Division I NCAA Championships. He has the most wins on Saturday of the NCAA Championships. He's an NCAA champion, placed third 3 times in a row, 4-time Big Ten champion. It's Nathan Tomasello of Ohio State. How are you, Nathan?
I'm good. That's a really cool statistic. I didn't even know that.
Well, you earned it. You earned that statistic.
Thank you.
What's that like to be on Saturday? Not only is it 7-0 on Saturday, it's 7-0 against all Americans. When you're in a situation like that after winning as a freshman, you come back and get third 3 consecutive years. That takes a lot to be able to come back and place third at the NCAA championships. How do you keep at a high level to be able to maintain the focus to get there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to who you are as a competitor. You know, you lose in a big match in the semis, a couple heartbreakers, and then it shows kind of your character, I think, when you are able to come back and let the match go and be able to focus in on at least the 2-1s that you have in the morning after a loss, or even for my freshman year after I won, be able to focus in on the finals. And then just having the team, thinking about the team a lot too. I knew each year we're in the running to win it or be in the top 3 as a team. And so every point mattered, and I knew that. And I love starting out the Buckeyes. And it was great to just kind of get the fire going in the morning and be able to win some matches.
Nathan, after you win the title there as a freshman and you know, as Kyle mentioned, coming back 3 times for third, what is your process like on Friday night after the semifinals in those 3 years? What does it look like, and what are the biggest challenges with resetting and getting yourself ready for Saturday morning?
Well, first it's after the match, being able to get some weight off. That would be kind of my time to wind down when I'm on the bike or whatever I'm doing to lose some weight, and then assess the situation and then move forward. And the biggest thing is just being able to let the match go, learn from it, and just having coaches around me that cared helped a lot. Coach Ryan, Jay, Travell. Even Lou Rizzelli when he was here, it was just really good to have them, and Coach Ralph as well, so that they were able to kind of help me just mentally be able to focus in on coming back in the morning. And I remember Jay telling me, he's like, hey, you've been here before. I know it really sucks, but you're a leader and we need you a lot in the morning. And that was this past year. In Cleveland, and especially in Cleveland, since this is my hometown, I wanted to leave a lasting memory for all the people that helped support me as I grew up in the area.
You said something interesting there that is not interesting to wrestling people, but it would be to another sport. You said, I had to lose some weight. And so that just comes with the territory in wrestling. But when you have to do that, how does that process into what you have to do to compete? Is that a good thing? Does that take your mind off what you have to do? Take us through what that means.
I mean, with wrestling, especially with the lighter weights, even the middle weights, everything is kind of structured as far as like with national tournament and other other tournaments, like you have to plan out kind of what you're going to do after your dunks each day. You have to weigh in. And so for me, a lot of times was someone sit on the bike so I can get on the bike right after I compete. And yeah, and then that either that kind of just plays into it. And then, like I said, it just helps me kind of wind down, as opposed to you lose, you go back to the hotel room and that's all you're thinking about. I think just being able to get on the bike, listen to some music, and kind of zone out a little bit, and just be able to relax. And because obviously there's a bunch of emotions going on through your head, and you're trying to replay the match. But the biggest thing is just being able to focus in on the next day and letting go. And that could be really tough, especially because your dream of being on the big stage and winning is gone, and the best you can take is third. So
do you ever think about how this will apply to the rest of your life? Because you did get a setback and you got two wins three times in a row. I don't know if it sinks in now, but I would think at some point that's going to be a useful tool as you navigate the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great with just being able to use that as kind of a platform to talk to kids when I do wrestling clinics about with setbacks, going through setbacks with losses, and then same thing with injuries, and being able to come back even stronger from that. And I think it's just been really, really great to show people, you know, everyone is kind of how you react to that loss and how you come back. That really, I think, impacts and shows people who you truly are and the way you hold yourself. And so that's what I try to do. And it's exciting because I think now I get a chance to really focus in on coming back and wrestling in international next few years and see what I got. And so it's fun, and I'm glad that Rudis has been really supportive, and Max Effort, my two sponsors. Rudis even came up with a warrior shirt that has been really cool to be able to sell a little bit and just kind of talk about, like, everyone's a warrior, especially in the wrestling world. And just having kind of that nickname, I guess, coined a little bit with just going through some adverse times.
Not many people start their career at 125, bump up to 133 for their junior season, then come back to 125. Why the decision to bump down? I know you had to make space for another wrestler, but how difficult was that to shrink your body back down to that weight class?
Yeah, it was absolutely one of the most challenging things I've gone through, getting back down to that weight. Not just from getting back down to it, but then also having to deal with a torn ACL and also compete at the highest level at a really low weight class. And so it was a challenge on me mentally and challenge on me physically. And I knew that if our team had a legitimate chance at winning another team championship, the best place for me would be the 125 pound weight class for us to do it. And then I knew that it would be a great way to start the bulk guys off. Like I said, I enjoy the role of being the guy that goes out first and sets the fire, sets the tone. And so, during the season, last season at least, I didn't get a chance to compete until January. So I missed half the season. Maintenance throughout the week was the biggest thing. Just had to be really, really good with my nutrition. And it's a learning process. Everyone's a little bit different, how their body reacts to different foods and the stress of competition, travel. And I definitely think that the nutrition and just being able to take time just to relax were big. And so it was a learning process, and it was just a good opportunity to keep growing, keep learning, and just understanding when I do go back down to it, when I wrestle internationally at 57, which is about the same weight, how to maintain and grow in my strength and just be able to compete at that weight at a high level.
Nathan, where are you in the rehab process, and what do you have your eyes set on now for your next competition?
Yeah, I'm past 7 months out now. I'm officially cleared to start going at it. The doctors are kind of waiting, or they were wanting to wait for me to compete towards the beginning of the year. So solid training, but not wearing the brace at all. It feels, my knee feels really normal at this point. Strength and agility wise, I feel like it's back to normal, and just been able to put on some more speed and strength. I think just from doing so much rehab with my knee. And so I'm excited to compete again in the next month or two and see what I got now that I'm fully healthy, because I was dealing with the injury since last October. And so it's good to finally be good to go, you know, and knowing that I can trust my knee in every situation.
You have the unique experience of saying that you have wrestled Thomas Gilman, Corey Clark, and Spencer Lee. Compare and contrast wrestling those three guys.
Yeah, they're all really good competitors. They're really a different challenge in that aspect. Corey Clark was good from a 2-on-1. He had good low singles. He was good at riding on top. And Spencer Lee, similar with I think he was the best out of three at riding on top and turning. He just did a good job staying on my hips and getting to the wrist, the arm bar. He's really good at that. And he had a good fireman's, pretty good hand fighting, and just solid overall. And Gilman was the bruiser. He's going to fight you hard and stay in great position and really stingy with his hands, head hands off or defense. And just tried really hard. And so those three were both, all three really challenges in themselves. And it was good to test every single time when I wrestled with them this past 5 years. So it's good. Those are great competitors.
Spencer's scoring a ton of points on tilts. What makes that so effective for him?
Yeah, I mean, he has a great feel on top. I think there's a lot of technique that you can show and learn from, but then there's also a feel, and he kind of has that feel on top where he knows how to keep weight down on your hands and stay tight on you even when you're trying to move on bottom. And he just does a good job, like I said, riding the hip a little bit and getting to the arm bar and tilts from there. And he's just solid. That's definitely his best position, and he's good. And it was a challenge for me, especially dealing with the knee injury during the season, being able to move on bottom. And so I just felt like that was kind of a little bit of a disadvantage when I wrestled him. And so at least in the Big Tens and the finals of Big Tens and the national semis, both of those, the plan was not to go bottom on him unless I had to.
You wrestled in the U-23s. I think that's where you got injured. Wasn't it U-23s in Rochester, unless it was already before that?
Yeah.
Against Dayton. Yep. Fix.
Yeah.
But why the decision to do that, given that it's your senior year, you're going into it? Seems like it's more commonplace, especially at Ohio State, these guys wanting to wrestle internationally. Why risk it?
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of the culture, I felt like, with Coach Ryan and Travell, just being really open to compete internationally and even compete during the season and the last few years. I mean, Miles Bourne and Colin just got back from the U-23s, and Kyle competed the last 2 years with an international schedule and with a college schedule. So they've been always really open to try making a U.S. team. And I wanted to try it since last year. I was that was probably going to be my last year to make the U-23 team. And so I wanted to try it. I think if I had to look back, I probably would have went up to 61, just because then it wouldn't have been too much of a cut. I would have just competed a little bit heavier and then brought my weight back down. And I think probably that led to, part of it was probably led to getting injured, because I had to make 25 really early on, as opposed to kind of getting my weight used to it. And so the biggest reason was just I wanted to try to make a U.S. team and see what I had to do that. And so it was a good tournament. Like I said, no one expects an injury like that from wrestling in it. And so, like I said, it's always a learning process and understanding when to plan out a tournament and what the best time is to compete. And so just doing a good job going forward of knowing, understanding my body and knowing when to turn it up and when to have more downtime.
How do you think Dayton Fix will do at 133?
He's good. I mean, he's a good competitor. Again, he's really fast. He's got good technique. I think he's a contender. I mean, I think he has a lot of good skills. I'm excited to watch him, watch the other guys at 33. It's definitely a deep weight class. And so, I think he's a great wrestler. And I'm excited to get another opportunity to wrestle him, hopefully in the next couple of years in the international scene.
Nathan, as you bounce back between 25 and 33 and you look back on your career, who's one guy that you didn't get the chance to wrestle that you really would have welcomed that opportunity?
Well, two guys come to mind. Deshaun Garrett, we never got a chance to wrestle in college. He was always at either the 1 year was at 33, I was at 25. But the year we were both at 25, I think that was the year I won it. He lost early on, got upset. We never got a chance to wrestle. So he's always a fun guy that is really explosive and fast. And so I would have loved to wrestle him in college. And then Darian Cruz, who never got a chance to wrestle in college, wrestled probably four or five times in high school. And he's always a fun guy to compete against as well, because he's got a lot of good skills, a lot of good moves. And it's just surprising because we're always kind of similar in weight whenever shit wrestled in college. So
when you go,
those two came to mind.
You go through 5 years of college, you redshirted, and now you have to come out the backside. And we've talked about your international career. There's just a lot of buzz around the Ohio State program. You're in a great environment where people are talking about you. And then it's kind of like, what's next? Do you feel like there's an emptiness after you get out of college? How do you deal with knowing what the next step is, given that really there's only one spot in your weight class that means anything? How do you deal with that pressure?
I mean, it definitely is a transition, I would say, after you finish up college, because then it becomes more, you're now a professional athlete and you're making kind of your own schedule as far as what works best for you as far as training goes, competition goes. And then the coaches are kind of assisting you in that manner. And then just kind of understanding that you're affiliated with the college team, but now you're done with competing as that with that team. And so I'm trying to that senior RTC leader in the room and just help younger guys that are there wrestle with them almost every day and help them in that aspect. And then for me going forward, the biggest thing is just right now I'm just trying to learn and get better, working with different coaches, wrestling with different partners. I wrestle guys at 125 all the way up to 165 in the room. And it's fun to get different feels and just getting the opportunity to kind of go around and train with other people and other coaches. And then just picking and choosing which tournaments I want to do to progress and get better. And then, get ready for the U.S. Open and the World Team Trials come April and June. And I think the biggest thing right now is just being excited to compete. I'm really excited to compete again soon. And then just carrying that into the World Team Trials and the Olympic Trials the following year. Just being excited to see what I got. And I don't think I'll have any regrets if I put everything into it and know that I've given everything I've got.
It is kind of a strange transition that wrestlers have to make, because it really is a top heavy when you're in the youth movement. You're wrestling maybe 100 matches in a season. And then if you look at the NBA, they have 82 games. It's the highest you can get. You're playing more games than ever. And then you get in wrestling the international style. You're not wrestling as much as you did in college or in high school or even at the youth level. What's your advice on how to make that transition and make it feel like it's still important and relevant?
I think the biggest thing is just being excited about the little things that you learn and grow in the training sessions, because it's more training than it is competition. I'll probably compete once every 6 to 8 weeks in a competition throughout the year. And then obviously the big one being the World Team Trials in June. And just, I would say, not looking too far ahead and just valuing the small things. Like if I picked up a little technique from one of the coaches or one of my partner showing me something, just being excited about that, you know, excited to learn and get better and valuing improving little by little, you know, and then seeing what you have when you do go out and compete. I think that's been the biggest thing in my mind the last few months as far as getting back to wrestling here, is just valuing the little technical things that I've gotten better at. And same thing with strength goals, getting better strength wise, agility goals, stuff like that. Just valuing the little things has been important for me. And then, just getting excited to compete again.
Does American Wrestling League add to your excitement, the possibility of still competing in that? They had the first one. Do you feel like that could help you enhance your career?
I think right now, this first year, I probably will stay out of it. I was asked to compete, but I think right now I'm going to just do a few international tournaments leading up to the trials and seeing how the American Wrestling League goes. But I think they're doing a really good job promoting it and just getting some of the elite senior guys to compete and just creating some buzz around it. I think it's always fun to watch some of the guys that you're hoping to watch in college matchup wise that sometimes they didn't get a chance to wrestle each other. And so I think they're doing a good job of kind of putting a pro league together. And hopefully it keeps growing and keeps getting stronger as the years progress.
You hear about guys that get out of college and they get into international wrestling, and then it just opens the floodgates and they can do things in the room and they can relax. So let's just take what it was like to wrestle Luke Pletcher last season and then what it's like to wrestle him now. Are you dominating him?
Luke's tough, man. His defense, his head hands defense is good. I mean, someone gets in, his leg defense is good. I mean, he's a good competitor. So we go back and forth. I would say a lot of times I would get the better of him, but he's challenged. I mean, he's another top 33 pounder that wrestles really good, and stingy, and he's got good technique and his agility's good. And so he's just a fun guy to go with. He has a good feel as far as if you want to spar with him, or same thing with going live. He makes me better every day. And I hope I do the same with him.
When did you first acquire the nickname NATO?
Yeah, I think on the forums, people were tired of writing how my long last name, which is Tomasello, Nathan Tomasello. So I think on the wrestling forum, it started just being abbreviated NATO, because those are kind of my first two letters of my first and last name. So NATO, NATO. And then Flo, I think, somehow got a hold of it and then started putting out NATO. And then all of a sudden, I have teammates start calling me it. And then all the wrestling fans start calling me it. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. And I think that was my sophomore year when it really started to become big. And then I was like, all right, I'll just embrace it. And so I kind of put my Instagram and Twitter as that name. And it's cool to have a nickname in college. I guess it means you made it big a little bit. I don't know. But it's really cool that everyone can call me NATO. You know, it's a fun nickname. And it's cool to be able to show it, you know.
Yeah, it sounds very political too. Just it sounds like it some treaty or NATO. I think there is a NATO maybe. So it's cool.
Yeah.
Cool nickname. Now let's talk about two people that aren't in wrestling. You mentioned that you are from Ohio, you live in Ohio. LeBron James goes to the Lakers. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I was really grateful for what he's done for Cleveland, the city. I mean, not only did he bring a championship, but he brought a lot of business back in the city, a lot of positive impact in that way. And I understood when he, I was like, when he, if he wants to leave, I totally understand that. I mean, at that point, it's more his decision, and him coming back was really cool to see. I think it really showed a lot of maturity of him coming back from Miami to Cleveland, and just with some of the teams we had in Cleveland, I mean, he had to really take on a big role, and it shows. I mean, this year Cleveland's last in the conference, and so he did a great job, and so I would say just hats off to him. I hope he has a great wrestling career, and maybe he can finish out in Cleveland.
All right, a guy that's a big wrestling fan that stepped down. Urban Meyer, the head football coach at Ohio State, stepping down. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I originally heard some rumors that he might, and originally I was like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, he's the face of Ohio State football. Everyone knows who Urban Meyer is, and he's won championships with Ohio State, with Florida, and really, really good coach. And just the health things, I mean, the stress. I mean, I can't imagine. I see how much stress Coach Ryan has with our team, and that's just wrestling. I know football is, I mean, it's huge in college. I mean, that's where a lot of schools make money, is from the football. And so if the football team isn't doing good, especially with the tradition that Ohio State has, I mean, I can't imagine. And so when he's dealing with this tumor in his brain, and I was like, it's probably the best thing for him. And like I said, just he's been a great coach. I mean, he's been actually at a few of our matches when I was competing. And so it's just really cool to see. He just seems like a really, really genuine guy. And he's brought a lot of good things to Ohio State.
What was it like being part of that 2015 NCAA team championship for Ohio State?
It was incredible. I definitely would say the night that we won it, that after celebration kind of at the hotel, was one of my favorite memories I could think of in my life. Just being able to thank so many of the fans, all my family was there, and it just felt surreal a little bit, being able to bring Ohio State a championship. I mean, Ohio, I believe, is known as one of the best high school wrestling states, and it definitely should be one of the best college wrestling states as well. And not to have a championship before them, it was just good to see that we finally that we're able to get it done and bring that national championship to Ohio. And it was just cool, and just being able to win it in that fashion was awesome. And then just kind of looking back at that season, we kind of had an up and down season. And I think what really brought us together was we lost at the national duel to Lehigh, which was a big upset. And then we had about a week and a half before the Big Tens. And I think it really was a humbling experience. And I think it just brought everyone from the team together. And we just, having the Big Tens at Ohio State my freshman year was huge. There's so many fans that showed up. It got so loud at St. John Arena. It was incredible. And that, I think, carried us through the national championship. And same for myself. I took taken four losses that year, all to some top guys, and I was able to make some corrections and put it together at the national tournament in Big Tens.
Even though it didn't end with an NCAA championship this past season, the 2017-2018 season, the duel between Penn State and Ohio State, I don't mean just the dual meet that you guys had just throughout the season. It was clear that it was going to be one of those two teams. To be part of that, to be part of something so exciting, take us through what it's like to be an athlete on your senior season in an exhilarating season like that.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, the hype between us and Penn State was sweet. We both knew that we were definitely battling for it, for the championship as a team. And it's good. It's good to know that there's a huge challenge, and it just pushes and motivated our guys. And I'm sure it did the same with Penn State as well. And so we knew that every point was going to matter. And it is a good team race. And I thought that it keeps helping the wrestling in general as a sport grow and reach more people and hopefully even become more popular. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I would say the last 10 years, definitely it's grown in a sense where like people know who the top guys are. This even random fans, like they know who you are, you know. It's crazy to think about. And I don't know if it was that big 10 years ago, you know, and I just think that it's been really cool to see that people are following it more, you know, and I think in the years to come, it'll keep getting bigger.
As far as how you view Penn State, you're in the program that's competing against them. You know, it's your biggest rival. How do you view it internally? Do you dislike those guys? Do you have just an amount of respect? Take us through that.
Yeah, there's some really good guys on their team. I've hung out with Zane Rutherford before, Nolf before. Those guys are really cool guys. Bo Nichols seems like a cool guy too. And I mean, there's definitely respect there. I think in the moment when you're competing against them, there's always like some anger because you want to just beat them so bad. But you know how hard the other people train, and you know, it's just, there's a certain amount of respect because you know how tough the sport of wrestling is. It's a challenge, and it takes everything you have. And so it's just good. I know that they got a great room. We got a great room. So it's fun.
All right. We'll end with this. You're a nice guy. How do you be a nice guy and stay competitive?
Yeah, there has to be a switch. I would say I'm really humble. I try to be really humble at least, and honest and just really try to connect with fans and just anyone in general. But then when I am going out to competition, just like I said, being a warrior and having that warrior mentality when I go out there, warrior champion mentality, where I'm going after it. I'm going to attack and I'm going to try to dominate, you know, and not being afraid. That's the biggest thing is when, you know, there's going to be nerves going right before the match. You just got to believe that your training that you put in and just going after it. And that's been my mantra, is be on the attack. I'm the best when I'm attacking the guy and I'm moving my hands, moving my feet and using my strength. God's definitely blessed me with strength and just being able to use that strength and my speed. And so that's kind of how I look at it. I want to be able to use the sport of wrestling to glorify God and connect with people and show others his genuine love for others through it. But then with my wrestling, when I go out there, that's what I think about. So,
all right. We appreciate this interview. Remember this, it's a way of life. And if some other company tries to market that, it's mine and mine alone. Don't let Rudis or anyone else try to take that, because I just invented that on the spot, Nathan.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but it is.
Rudis is awesome, man. Yep. They do a good job. So. Yep.
We appreciate this. Thanks for coming on the program. We can't wait to see you continue to compete, hopefully through, I don't know, what's the end game for you, 2032? Can we see you through then?
Maybe. We'll see, man. I love to stay there that long. So as long as I'm healthy, I'll keep competing.
All right. We appreciate it. That was Nathan Tomasello. For Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
This
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.